We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 73 of the Spurs Up Show, the best Gamecocks podcast on the internet. We have got a packed show for you guys today. A little bit of a different episode. Thomas Floyd is actually busy with exams this week at South Carolina. So we've just got an exclusive interview for you guys with a very special Gamecock and someone that I was a huge fan of growing up. He played for the Gamecocks from 2003 to 2006, was a Swiss Army knife type player, could really do it all for South Carolina and did it all for the Gamecocks in Garnet and Black. I sit down and chat with Savelle Newton. We talk about the recruiting process for him, position changes, playing for Steve Spurrier, what he's doing after football, and much, much more in a very exclusive interview. So please be sure to stay tuned for that. As always, this show is presented to you by SeatGeek. Be sure to go download the SeatGeek app and use the promo code SPURSUP to get $20 off your first purchase. SeatGeek is the only app I use for ticket buying. They actually have a rating system which rates the tickets based on the deal you're getting. So if you're getting a really good deal, you'll see a green meter next to the tickets. If you're getting a really bad deal, you'll see a red meter next to the tickets. It's, again, the only ticket buying app that I use. You can purchase tickets to anything. We're talking Belk Bowl. We're talking college basketball, NFL, comedy club, concerts, you name it. Anything you want, it's on SeatGeek. So download the SeatGeek app. Use our promo code SPURSUP, that's S-P-U-R-S-U-P, to get $20 off your first purchase. If you're looking to go to the Belk Bowl and you've already got an account and say, Chris, what do I do? Download the SeatGeek app anyways, create a new account with a new email, and use that promo code SPURSUP to get $20 off your first purchase and get your $20 off your purchase off the Belk Bowl tickets. We want as many Gamecock fans as we can get in Charlotte. All right, so let's get into the interview. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Let's do it. All right, joining us today on the Spurs Up Show is a Gamecock fan I know all of you are very familiar with. He played for the Gamecocks from 2003 to 2006, is one of just four players in college football history with more than 600 yards rushing, passing, and receiving in his career, a Swiss Army knife, do-it-all type player for the Gamecocks. I want to welcome to the show Savelle Newton. Savelle, again, appreciate you taking the time and really pleased to have you on.
Hey, thank you guys for allowing me to be on this show.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I want to jump right into it. Obviously, you were a very highly rated recruit coming out of high school, and for good reason. It's funny, you know, before we went on the, before we went live here, I was actually just watching some of your old videos, highlight videos, and the one that came up was your recruiting announcement, if you will, where you picked between Carolina and Clemson and put the Clemson hat on and then threw it off, put the Carolina hat on. And I just listened to that interview. You talked about how close it was between Clemson and Carolina and where you went to college. Just talk about, you know, how close was it really? And at the end of the day, what made you want to be a Gamecock?
Well, during that recruiting process, Coach Rick Stocksdale was at Clemson during the time, and he was very aggressive recruiting me and Demetrius Summers and Noah Whiteside, a couple more guys out in the state. And also, Chris Koch was at USC at the time. He was recruiting me for USC. It was kind of like a battle. I never did want to go to either one of the schools, actually, in South Carolina. I actually had committed to Auburn. I committed to Auburn. And then once I went down and met with Coach Tubberville, he didn't know who I was. So I was like, you know, I'm committing to a school that a coach don't even know who I am. Mm. And then I wanted to go to the other USC, but Pete Carroll, he didn't want me to play quarterback. And so I committed to UCLA just, you know, to get away from home. And that whole coaching staff got fired the same week I committed. And, you know, it kind of left me with, I knew I wasn't going to play in the cold. So I wasn't going to any of the schools upstate, and I didn't want to go to Florida to play at all. So it just left me kind of with the in-state schools, and me and kind of Demetrius, we got together and we just decided to say, hey, which one are we going to? Which one is going to be? He said South Carolina, so I said South Carolina too. That's kind of how that actually happened.
That's awesome. So you guys obviously played for a Hall of Fame coach, a legend, Lou Holtz. I know you'd also talked about in that interview, that was a big selling point for you, obviously, the relationship with Lou Holtz. Just talked about, because you got to play for him for his last 2 years coaching ever. Just talk about that relationship you had with Lou Holtz, and not only the impact he had on you as a football player, but the you know, everlasting impact he's had on you to this day.
Well, Coach Holtz was one of those guys when he came to recruit me, you know, he had some, it was something about him that kind of just led me to be more, you know, leaning towards Carolina. He gave those old grandpa lines that that just made you just sit and think about, like, wait a minute, what did he say? And then after you think about it, you just got it. And he was always one of those guys that said, we're going to change the culture and you're going to be a major part of this. And then, you know, it was like one of those things. And even though he made me cut my hair, which he told me he wasn't going to make me cut my hair, and he told me he wasn't going to change my position, he changed my position the third day. Well, the first scrimmage we had, I had a 72-yard run, and the next day he had me a wide receiver. I was like, you know, so it was kind of one of those things. But it was a great experience. I actually still talk to Skip Holtz. I was rooting for him when he came into Carolina. I always thought that he should have got a shot at being the coach. Would have loved to have him be the coach. It was a hard transition going from the Holtz family to the Spurrier family. Mm-hmm. Very hard, very difficult. And, you know, so that was one of the major things. I hate that, you know, he didn't finish my whole career out.
Yeah, and I definitely want to get to that in a second, because I definitely think that's fascinating, going from, you know, playing. It's funny, you had half your career under Lou Holtz and the other half under Steve Spurrier. Two legendary coaches, but two guys who did it completely different. You know, to get that common goal.
Yes, sir.
But so you talked about, you know, your freshman year obviously didn't play a ton, but you got moved immediately. So you came out of high school as you were going to college, I'm going to be a quarterback. You're dead set on being a quarterback. You get flipped to wide receiver. And I mean, really your whole career, you're just moving all over the field. How tough was that? You know, because I'm sure you have these dreams and aspirations. You go to college, I'm going to, you know, we all have it planned out, right? And then obviously nothing ever goes to plan, it seems like. But how tough was that for you being a young kid? Like you're saying, immediately you get moved positions. I mean, how were you able to combat that?
Well, I've always been like a given person and person that sacrifices a lot. So, you know, even though it was something that I did not want to do, I did it for the team, and they made it sound so good as far as like, you're so athletic, you know, like there aren't too many quarterbacks like you that play like you. And during that time, the style of play hadn't all switched over into the running quarterbacks, the more athletic quarterbacks. It still was more drop back. So, you know, Clemson really did have the offense that fit my style of play. Mm. Coming up with the Rudrow Dantzler type quarterback, and then you know, so that was really probably the best option for me. But going to Carolina and just switching the positions, I never did want to switch. I never asked to switch. I know a lot of times it was told that I asked to switch. I never asked to switch a position one day at Carolina. I always thought that I was the best quarterback on the team at the time. That's a humble way of putting it, but I just never could figure out why, you know. Well, with Coach Holtz, I knew why with Coach Spurrier, but with Coach Holtz, I could never just figure it out. I think he just wanted to play the senior in front of me.
So it's funny, your sophomore season, you go into that season, you get your opportunity at quarterback, have a pretty solid year. Just talk about, you know, again, kind of battling adversity, that freshman season didn't go exactly how you wanted, but then getting that opportunity in the sophomore year, to show kind of why you should have been in that starting role in the first place. What was that like? Because obviously, you know, South Carolina had two back-to-back. I'd say 02 and 03 were disappointing seasons, didn't make a bowl game or didn't meet bowl eligibility. And in 2004, you guys were able to rebound. I mean, I still remember specifically the 2004 South Carolina-Arkansas game where Troy Williamson did what Troy Williamson did best, and you guys were able – it was a really fun win. I just remember that game specifically from that season. But just talk about what that was like, getting your opportunity and kind of getting your shot to play quarterback in the SEC.
Well, you know, actually, it was kind of fun, but it was very confusing. Mm. You know, a lot of people didn't know, like, the behind-the-scenes things as far as the – as far as the coaching staff and the style of coaching. That year, Coach Holtz was actually more on the offense. He was more like in the offensive rooms, kind of taking over the offensive calls. And it was a whole lot of confusion going on between himself and Coach Skip Holtz. And, you know, it was a whole lot of confusion going on with the coaching staff that year, which kind of led to how it ended. But just getting my chance to be the quarterback, didn't really have a big grasp on the offense. I didn't know exactly what I was doing. I was actually just out there just you know, calling plays and didn't actually know what the play was. Sometimes, you know, he would call a Notre Dame play, and I'm like, we don't even run this play. So it was it was very hard that year. You know, just being in an offense where you didn't know, like, what type of plays. If, you know, third and long, we call in a play that we haven't even practiced all season, but it's in the playbook, so I guess you expect to know it. But it was just one of those things, and Coach Skip and Coach and his father didn't quite – they weren't on the same page, and it was very, very, very difficult being a quarterback in the SEC when you got, like – the SEC defenses used to be way better than they are today. You know, you played against the Alabama defense every single game. And actually that year we went to Alabama where they
y'all waxed them.
And we had two touchdowns in the last like 3 minutes of that game to put us over the top. And they had like the top defense that year. So you played against that every single week in the conference. But now it's kind of, you know, nobody plays defense. But it's crazy. You know, that year was very crazy going from organized offense from high school, being a number five quarterback in the nation, then going to a school that really didn't have it under control. So it was hard.
Yeah, and you said something I really agree with, is that you were sort of ahead of the times, if you will, for being a dual threat quarterback that could both run and pass. Because we see it now, obviously, with the spread offense. I mean, I feel like now it's a rarity if you don't have a quarterback that can run as well as throw. Talk about just kind of your game as a quarterback in general. I mean, did you prefer to run over pass or pass to throw, or did it really matter to you? How would you say, or maybe if there was a professional that you tried to model your game after, I mean, what was your playing style, if you will?
Well, honestly, I look at quarterbacks these days in the NFL and still think I can actually go out and play better than half of them.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
But the style of play, that I actually, if you could watch any of my high school film, you would see that I, you know, we threw the ball all over the field. We let it go all. I played with the top wide receiver in the nation, Tommy Zimmerman, in high school, and you know, he was the number one wide receiver. Him and Roscoe Crosby kind of battled for that one and two spot. So even in college, you know, my desire was to be one of those guys that line up in the shotgun like I did in high school, throw the ball all over the place. And when it was time for me to run, I could run. I can get away and escape. So, before my time was definitely the answer. Just like the Wildcat, you know, I still don't get the credit for the Wildcat, but actually I was still the first one to run Wildcat, but nobody gives me the credit for it. But it's kind of crazy knowing that now you see all these schools and I see all these teams that's running, even in the NFL. You know, you got guys who can run the ball when they need to. You know, I was just one of those guys, and I wish that, you know, maybe my mom decided to have me like 10 years later.
Absolutely. So, you know, one of the most fun parts about, you know, being able to bring guests on like yourself, Savelle. Like, we've been able to talk with people from different eras, I'd say, of Gamecock football, from more recent to even back in the 90s. And, you know, you're the first player I've gotten to talk to from, you know, 03 to 06, sort of those transition years, obviously, from Holtz to Spurrier. But I can't get off the 2004 season because I've never been able to get the perspective, and I'm fascinated to ask you about the 2004 Clemson game and the brawl. Yeah. Because obviously you were hurt on that play, and you had to be helped off the field while all this madness is going on. I mean, just talk about what happened. What was going through your mind? You're seeing this unfold, and just talk about what you remember from the brawl.
Well, actually, it started at the beginning of the game. I remember we had Coach Dave Roberts. Me and Demetrius, we actually ran out first in front of the team, and I would just remember him screaming, "No!" He said, "Meet them at the bottom of the hill." So we we ran to the bottom of the hill, and if you remember that first play, that first kickoff return.
Oh yeah, Corey Boyd.
Corey Boyd got hit, and it was a fumble. So that kind of set the tempo of the pace of the game.
Right.
Yeah, maybe we shouldn't have ran to the bottom of the hill, but that play was kind of crazy because it was fourth down. I mean, we didn't really. It was kind of like desperation time.
Right.
I threw the ball to Matthew Thomas, and of course, the ball didn't make it there because I got hit while I was throwing it. And while on the ground, one of their players, I forgot the guy's name, but he walked by and he kind of gave me a little punch to the helmet. And Chris White was the center that time, and he saw it happen. And he pushed the guy, and then the next thing I know, you know, it was a pushing match, and all I felt was somebody stomping on my ankle at the time. And he, you know, you got 22 players on the field at one time, offense and defense. And then you got 22 more players coming on the field, offense and defense. So you're sitting there with like 44 players on the field at one time, and people are having a pushing match. So I feel like it kind of escalated from there. But you know, when you look at the teams and you look at the rosters, we all have played against each other in high school. I even had a cousin there at the time, Tremaine Billy. So you know, you look at it just was a bad situation that looked bad. It could have just been something simple. I mean, a guy pushed the quarterback. So what?
Right.
The game's over. You know, go off the field. But it just turned into something that, you know, now it's always going to be known as one of the biggest right. brawls in sports history. Yeah.
So your ankle was – your ankle was stomped on by the Clemson guy, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was actually stomped on twist. I had a high ankle sprain prior to that. I'm going into that game, so it was I was kind of doubtful. Like the past three games that I got hurt at Kentucky that year, but that's the game that Mike Rath came in and backed me up, and he won the game off that pass. That's that year. So they knew I had a high ankle sprain, and they really tried to break. Yeah.
Right. So yeah. So all that craziness happens. Both teams don't get to go to a bowl game because of that. Then your head coach resigns. You have a coaching change. Coach Spurrier comes in. I mean, a lot is going on. I remember specifically, too, I mean, I almost hate to bring it up, but obviously your good friend you came into Carolina with, Demetrius Summers, gets dismissed. I'm sure that was, you know, tough for people, obviously, friends with him. And just a lot of craziness happening. Talk about what that was like going from the Holtz era to the Spurrier era and just how not just you but the entire team sort of took that on.
It was actually a horrible transition. You know, I'm one of the only ones that kind of speak honestly about that transition.
Mm-hmm.
I hated it. Honestly, I hated it for myself. Some of the players, it was so much that went on from the end of the season, that game, you know, the players who've been getting pictures and stuff all, you know, through the whole time. If you can recall during that transition, that's was the same time that we all got arrested for, you know, for having pictures of ourselves. You know, I know the media tried to make it seem as if like we were thieves or something.
Yeah,
like
I didn't know that.
But actually, actually it was portraits. I had a portrait of myself and Coach Holtz. And I got, and a few guys, because at the end of evidently it was some type of violation, but the school tried to, you know, use us as if we took the pictures, but actually they have been giving these pictures to the guys after the season all these years. So, you go from that, and you go from Mo Thompson getting kicked off the team for a joke, you know, for a joke, and then you get Demetrius getting kicked off the team for not even failing a drug test. So it was kind of like, I'm you know, it was a horrible transition. And then the first time I met Coach Spurrier, I never forget it. The first day I met him was after like his team meeting. And the team meeting of him being introduced, and I met him. You know, I was like, "Oh yeah, you know, Coach Spurrier. Wow, you know, fun and gun offense. I'm ready." And then, you know, my first meeting with him, his first words were to me like, "Hey, think you'll make a great wide receiver in my offense." So, So that was how that actually happened. I never got a chance to go into the spring and compete for a quarterback as a quarterback. I never was even pegged on the depth chart as a quarterback. It was, you're going to be a wide receiver in my offense. And he also offered me to transfer. So that was like the first meeting that most Carolina fans don't even know what the heck Bill Newton went through during those times. But, it, you know, now that I look back at it, you know, maybe I should have transferred. Maybe it was the best time because transferring wasn't so big as it is now.
Right.
You know, so, you know, like, again, before my time. But maybe I should have transferred and took the offer of being able to transfer to any school. He said he assigned for me to go from to any school. He did not want me to play quarterback. So, but that was like the first.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, probably if that happened today, I mean, you probably would have transferred just because it's so much more the popular thing, right? I mean, you can go and
– I would have transferred quick, you know, because I'm like – Or, you know, you hear about the stories of Coach Spurrier and his type of quarterback, and then you see this guy who's an athlete who can throw, run, do all these things, and he tells him, you know, hey, I don't want you to play quarterback. So it's kind of one of those things that that kind of just stuck with me, and I end up staying and playing wide receiver that next year, and that's when Blake was kind of struggling. He was kind of struggling, and that's when Coach Spurrier, against Kentucky Wildcats, put in the Wildcat formation. That's when I kept motioning back and forth, and then the next game was the Vanderbilt game where I did the same thing and tore my Achilles. So,
So I was just going to say, I mean, that 05 season, obviously you didn't transfer, and like you're saying, you played wide receiver. I remember specifically, I mean, UCF, the first game of the Spurrier era, you had a – receiving touchdown in that one. One of the funny things I'm thinking, you know, talking about how he moved you off the depth chart at quarterback, and it's kind of funny that he did that because he had, you know, I don't know where he's at now, and I'm not trying to take a dig at him, but like Antonio Hefner, who was backing up Blake Mitchell, I mean, I would argue that you were not, I don't know about similar style, but way more dynamic, I would say. I don't ever know why, you know, because Antonio Hefner, we all know, I remember vividly he got really one shot to play in his career, and it was the game at Auburn where South Carolina just got, you know, beat pretty bad. And that's just kind of funny to hear that, you know, he wasn't willing to give you a chance when he has a guy like Hefner that is really just not as good of a version, I would say, as you were at quarterback.
Well, they tried to move him to they tried to move him actually, but he did not move. Like, he did not move. He was content with just being the fourth string quarterback.
Right.
And that, how that happened was that game, he was not supposed to start that game. He was kind of, I think we had, who was it? Kate Thompson.
I can't remember,
but they had a horrible week at practice. And it was like the day before, like Coach Spurrier had said, like, "Hey, Tonio, you playing?" I remember that. And then we get in the huddle at the Auburn game, and if you can recall, the first play was a timeout because the crowd was loud and his eyes like were like that super wide in the huddle, and we like, "Hey man, what's the play?" And you know, I remember that game, and it was like you said, very bad. It was very bad, and it goes, you know, just to show what type of, you know, coach during that time, you know, we were all dealing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, but I will say, you were able to turn 2005 until your injury into a really productive season, I thought. I mean, You know, mm-hmm. we had talked before this interview, just kind of from us posting the highlights, that your game against, you know, Vanderbilt was one of the best. I mean, you've probably seen from a South Carolina athlete, scored in all different type of ways. I remember specifically that, you know, that game, just how dynamic you were. Just talk about, you know, that season, that game specifically, I guess we can say, just, you know, mm-hmm. what was clicking for you in that game? Because like I said, it seemed like every time you touched the ball, you were finding the end zone. And then obviously you suffered the injury. I mean, I feel like it had to be so tough when that game, you're starting to finally kind of find your groove. It's clicking, you know, again, you're hot, you could almost say. And then you get that injury. And I remember when that happened, I don't know if it was an article or maybe I heard someone saying that you thought your football career was over. I mean, you thought that was it. Mm-hmm. Just talk about how difficult that was for you, you know, suffering that injury and then knowing you had to rehab to get back to the next season just to get back on the field.
That was a crazy game. I mean, you know, I had been talking at the time, my brother was actually in the NFL playing for the Atlanta Falcons. And, you know, the story was kind of like, you know, I talked to some of the coaches and I kind of was making up my mind like, hey, I wasn't coming back for my senior season. You know, I'm going to ride it while I'm hot. That time I was leading the team, like right there, me and Sitton was kind of neck and neck. With the receiving receptions and stuff that year. And I had already made up in my mind I wasn't coming back to Carolina. And that game was – it's funny because – crazy story behind that game. I never wore new cleats. I never wore new cleats. And my cleats were super dirty. You know, I'm from Marlboro County. Didn't really – we barely had cleats, you know. And to Coach Spurrier that game – said, hey, Savella, why you like to wear these dirty cleats? And I was like, they just feel good. So, you know, he actually made the trainer go get me a brand new pair of cleats. So I was actually wearing, that was my first time wearing those cleats. But that game was, it was special. Like I said, we ran the Wildcat from following the Kentucky game. And, you know, I started off at running back, move out the wide receiver, Blake motion out the quarterback, and that's where that whole formation started from, that game, with the Wildcat, that game. And, you know, I got a lot of opportunities to rush the ball, got a lot of opportunity. I threw two touchdown passes that game. Mm-hmm. It was a fun game. I was having so much fun, and actually I thought one of my linemen just stepped on my ankle. Mm-hmm. But I can remember I remember Dr. Guy hitting me with the And I was like, what that mean? And then he was like, son, you're done this year. And then, you know, that was kind of – it was a hard thing, you know, to deal with. Not hearing too much. You didn't hear about Achilles injuries that much during that time, as much as you hear about them now. So, you know, I didn't know about it. All I was reading about was saying it's a career-ending injury. But I had great therapy with the staff was there. Carrie Gorton, she took great care of me. I'm talking about three workouts a day, and I had one of the fastest returns on an Achilles injury. They still have the if you go to the stadium, it's still in the training room, and it talks about the road to recovery from that injury. And you know, it was great getting back and coming back my senior season and being able to play again, which was a very interesting season.
Yeah, no, for sure. So I want to talk about that road to recovery, like you were talking about real quick. What was the most difficult part of that recovery? Was it the actual physical getting back to full strength, be able to play, or was it just the mental grind of knowing you almost had to kind of reset, you know, and just get back, being able to, you know, run again, play again, all that stuff?
Well, I would say the mental, it was more mental. You know, I would say, you know, maybe some anxiety, a little bit of depression sat in. You know, you didn't hear about all those things during those times. Like I said, as you hear about things now, I was telling myself I'm done. I don't know what I'm going to do. Maybe I have to do music. I don't know. Maybe I'm going to have to start going to class now, taking it serious. I didn't really know, as far as like what was next. And, I actually, you know, I kind of just kind of went into my room. I was kind of locked myself in my room and start writing, start reading, just doing different some things. But I became very angry And I was just angry at everyone, you know, but just, you know, not understanding that, hey, I got an opportunity to rehab and make a comeback. So that was very difficult for me during that time. I had a whole lot of anger and anxiety issues that I dealt with during that time.
Absolutely. So you were able to rehab, though. You were able to come back. Mm-hmm. And like you said, 2006, your senior season was probably the weirdest of all of them. You know, I have to imagine you're probably coming that season, you're like, okay, Blake's a starting quarterback, Blake Mitchell, starting quarterback. It's kind of like, you know, it's just, where am I going to fit in? And after game two, after the Georgia game, South Carolina gets shut out at home. I remember I was at that game. South Carolina gets shut out. You're back in the fold. I mean, playing quarterback. And I mean, I would say you had a very, very productive season. Led South Carolina. I know that Blake Mitchell eventually came back in after, I think it was the Arkansas game he came into, but you were very much in the fold, you know, at quarterback through, I think it was 12 touchdowns. Yeah, I got it pulled up right here. 12 touchdowns. I remember specifically, you know, that Thursday night game against Auburn that, you know, I would argue South Carolina should have won. I mean, it was
Jared Cook dropped the touchdown pass.
Yeah, I didn't even want to say it. I'll be honest with you, because he's doing so good in the NFL right now.
He's getting paid big bucks. So I can say it.
Yeah, no, exactly. But
you should have caught that ball.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. But you were all over the field again and even played defense, which you had a huge sack in that Clemson game that season to set up when they missed the field goal. Just talk about that season as a whole. I mean, again, you're all over the field. I feel like you almost feel like you're going week to week, not knowing, okay, am I going to stay at quarterback? Am I going to – and then just add on top of it, you're playing defense as well. I mean, just talk about what that senior season was like after, again, you talked about you were planning on leaving earlier junior year, the injury derails that, and then you come back your senior year. And again, I'd say you had what was a pretty productive, you know, senior season.
Yeah. You know, if I could say what that season was and it not be looked upon as bad, but that season was hell. it was, you know, coming off an injury like I suffered, working so hard, you know, to get myself mentally back into it. And also working so hard to get back physically able to compete like I did my senior year. So that was very difficult. And, you know, the first game we came back, that was the Mississippi State game. And that's when I actually threw that pass to Corey Boyd and kind of put us up. And, you know, I was already known, you know, to be a quarterback. And when we start struggling in the offense, on the offensive end of the ball, and I was, you know, warming up in practice, throwing to the receivers, and for some odd reason, Coach Bird came over and asked, hey, Savelle, you want to throw some passes in practice? And I was like, not really. But, you know, I actually did it. And the next day, they had a package in, you know, for me to be the quarterback. And that was kind of going into the Wofford game. Yeah, so, you know, it was kind of crazy. I didn't know that I was going to actually be starting, but then he announced that I was starting. I was like, whoa, I guess I got to get ready.
Yeah, yeah, no, I remember specifically, so it's funny. I actually went to, you know, I didn't have season tickets back then. I was only, I was probably 14 or 15. But I remember specifically I went to Georgia, Florida, Atlantic, and Wofford and was at that FAU game where you threw – it was a pretty historical game. You threw the 5 touchdowns of Sidney Rice. I think Eric Norwood had his – first sack of his career in that game.
Bentley's the only one that threw 5 touchdowns. That's what they said.
Yeah, so that's inaccurate.
Yeah, very inaccurate.
Both though, that's
you know, yeah,
you specifically threw 5 to Sidney Rice. I'll ask you this: talk about your relationship with Sidney Rice. Obviously, because you knew him as a wide receiver. You know, you knew him as you were beside him as a wide receiver. You threw to him as a quarterback, and obviously, we all know the talent that he was and is. Just talk about your relationship with Sidney Rice, what that was like playing with him.
Well, it was great. It was great playing with Sidney. Very humble guy, you know, nice guy. Always walk around with a smile on his face. I remember the first day that Sidney even found his way on the depth charts. No one knows the Sidney Rice story. Mm-hmm. Sidney Rice was actually, like, on the back of the depth chart, like the last receiver on the depth chart. And one day in practice, we were doing a drill. And I remember Blake threw the ball super high, and Sidney just went up very high and grabbed it and pulled the ball in. And Coach Spurrier that game just said, hey, I mean, that practice said, let's throw this guy some fade routes and see what he can do. And Sitton caught like four fade routes over Jonathan Joseph and Coach Simpson, those type guys. You know, that's where Sitton made his name for himself. You know, good guy. Never really – I haven't heard from him probably since 2007. But, you know, we did during our time while we was at college. We had a very close relationship. But, you know, he went on to play in the NFL. I didn't. So, I guess we kind of lost our connection with each other during that time.
Right. And it was funny. We were able to – not sure if you saw. We were able to chat with Mo Brown, who I think played just after you at Carolina, wide receiver.
He played with you 1 year.
Okay. That is right. Yeah, 06. But he actually told us he thought Sidney Rice was the best wide receiver he had ever seen, which, you know, is pretty high praise. But, so that 06 season, obviously, I think one of the plays, I don't say one of your most famous plays, one of the most well-known plays I can think of, one of the most well-known touchdowns you scored was the play at Kentucky, you know, the Kenny McKinley pass down the field, which everybody thinks South Carolina's going conservative. Let's just sit on it and win the game. You catch the pass in the corner of the end zone. Is that your favorite score as a Gamecock or most memorable? Or do you have a touchdown that sticks out that you had in Garnet and Black that kind of above all the others?
No, I mean, that one wasn't the best one that I would say. Actually, probably one of my favorite ones was against Ole Miss back in the 2005 season. It was like a run up the middle. That was one of my favorite ones. But you know that play was actually a good play. I remember it. But that the end of that game wasn't very special. You know, that was when we were up. We should have probably kicked the field goal. Should have let Ryan Sucker come in and kick the field goal just to end the game. But Coach Spurrier decided to go for it on 4th and 2. And I looked at the defense, and the play was not going to work. I was going to get hit in the mouth because – but I tried to – but I actually called timeout, and we didn't have any timeouts. I pulled a Chris Webber in football.
Right.
So we went back 5 yards, and we still went forward. And I'll never forget it after that game. I actually got the video saved on my phone. I got the video. I never lose that video. After the game, I went to give Coach Spurrier like his normal fist bump. He slapped my hand and told me to get the hell out of his face. I'll never forget that. Yeah, wow. I never forget that one. But that was a game, man. Me and Coach Spurrier didn't quite. I mean, that relationship. that's another story for another day. But that wasn't the best relationship I could say that I've had over my 33 years of living. Especially not the 2006-07 year. That was, you know, the ups and downs for that. You know, being like you said before, being one of the only four players to be acknowledged for that that all-purpose record that I needed like 6 or 8 yards to pass Hines Ward. You know, he knew that. I mean, ESPN even talked about it. But to take me out at the Arkansas game at halftime and never play another snap of offense, to come the next week, you know, to get a phone call while I'm asleep from Coach Ron Cooper, the defensive back coach, telling me, hey, man, we need you to be at the defensive meeting. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he was like, son, I know this is blah, blah, blah. But, you know, that morning when I got there, I was so upset. And I didn't know that I was going to be playing defense. I never played, you know, defense.
Right.
So, yeah, but we was going against the national champions that game, Florida. And to know, like, okay, starting quarterback is playing defense, and everybody made it seem like as if I made that decision. I literally, like, tried to quit. Like, I told them I'm done. Like, I'm not playing anymore. And, you know, the coaches pulled me to the side and said, hey, son, you know, you're that close to the NFL. You don't want to do this. We understand. But they told me they had no place for me on offense. I remember that. I asked. I said, I can't play wide receiver. I can't play running back. They said, no, we full at wide receiver. We full at running back. Can't play quarterback. So, that game, I still went out and had 10 tackles that game, my first game playing defense. And I also dropped the interception that probably would have won the game.
But yeah. No, I was just going to say, I can't imagine, you know, it's one thing to not start at quarterback where you want to be and be, all right, I'm still going to be on offense, making plays. But, and I remember too, you know, you say they made it sound like it was your choice. I mean, I just remember they made it at least like it wasn't a big deal. It's just everybody's on board with this move. And right. Like you're saying,
I wasn't on board. I was very disruptive that whole week at practice. You know, like with the receivers. I mean, I could play, like I said, what I did at practice, I proved that I could play any position on the field. Going into that game that week at practice, I was, you know, jamming the receiver. They couldn't get off the line. And, you know, because I was so upset, I was competing at game time, at game tempo while they was just in practice. So I was very, very disruptive that week. Still went out, had a great game, ended up starting at safety the rest of the season. But that never was a choice of mine. I never asked for it. Even all the way up to the Clemson game, you know, where I was able to tell the coaches, hey, I can tell that it's run past by the offensive tackle. And we actually knew every play that they were doing that game because I found something on film, this film study. The last game we played was the Liberty Bowl. And ESPN did this big old thing like, hey, you know, coach, you know, in Seville, you're right here. You need six. It's like it was 6 or 8 yards. I can't even remember. It's been so long now. It's been 12 years. They was like, you need this amount of yards. And Coach Spurrier, actually, I practiced offense a couple of plays. Like, they had a couple of plays just to throw me some little screen routes to get the 8 yards that I needed. But never happened. Never did it in the game. Never called the play. Never played. We actually blew. Who was it that year?
Houston.
Houston. We played Houston in the game and never gave me an opportunity to get those yards. So after the game, my senior season, win a bowl game. You know, before they got to the locker room, I was already dressed with my family.
Right.
You know, I was so hurt, so upset that you know that I've given so much to a university or to a program that basically gave me nothing, pretty much nothing. So, you know, and I'm not, I don't harbor that or hold regrets to it anymore because I love Coach Muschamp and I love his staff. I think they're awesome. I love what they're doing. I want to be a part of it. But, you know, the whole Spurrier situation, I never forgot that, you know.
Yeah, I think one of the most interesting things about, you know, your relationship or lack thereof with Steve Spurrier and I guess maybe his stubbornness and not wanting to give, you know, you an opportunity being a dynamic playmaker back at quarterback is that, you know, like we said, you were ahead of your time for sure, the style of quarterback you were and style of player you were. And I would argue that almost set up for – I think Steve Spurrier eventually realized that he—that's what he needed—a player like you. And I would argue
it wouldn't have been Stephen Garcia, or never been a Connor Shaw.
Absolutely,
it would have never been those guys. It would have just been your typical, you know, drop back quarterback that came in and run that style of offense. I changed the narrative for him. You know, he even wrote about it in his book. He wrote about me in his book, the old ball coach.
Yeah, I don't have it, so I mean, I don't know, but I remember his book specifically.
Yeah, that book he wrote about me in the book. Well, whoever wrote the book wrote about me in the book. I still haven't read it. Don't want to read it. Probably won't read it.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, you know, you hear so many things about that situation as far as Coach Spurrier and Coach. We're talking about a coach who turned down Cam Newton for coming to the university.
Wow, I did not know that.
Well, do your research. Cam Newton was told if he come to South Carolina that he would play tight end.
It's funny because I've actually been able to talk to Stephen Garcia, Connor Shaw, and Perry Orth, and some of the other guys that played quarterback for Spurrier, you know, while he was at South Carolina. And it's funny, you know, you hear, like, for example, Garcia and Shaw talk about, especially Connor Shaw talk about, you know, how tough Steve Spurrier was on his quarterbacks. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, you're a guy he actually liked. So I can't imagine how tough it would have been to be a quarterback under Steve Spurrier when he's a guy that, you know, like yourself. I mean, it sounds like a tough relationship, I guess you could say. I mean, we obviously know kind of his mannerisms and how he is in general. And I know that can rub people the wrong way and just come off, you know, as being an ass. So, but I will say as a Gamecock fan, you know, I'm so glad we're talking about it because it's great to hear kind of what was going on behind closed doors. But I know that South Carolina fans still think of you to this day and nothing – or will always think of you as nothing but a selfless player and somebody who was a team guy. And, I mean, you know, I mean, just to stick around if we're moving from offense to defense, like, you know, like you said, I mean, I can't imagine how tough that would have been. But obviously the NFL, professional football was on your mind. I just want to touch on it just for a second. I was actually reading you were rated the 37th best wide receiver in the 07 NFL draft by a draft website. You went undrafted, had a short career in the Canadian Football League, did some arena football. Just talk about your professional career as a whole. And then I'm curious, do you think that – because, you know, I would argue in college, not that you didn't have a position, but I think you maybe did so many things well that maybe scouts didn't know where to put you or where to really list you. Do you think that had any impact on your professional career? And then, again, just talk about your professional career, how you feel it went as a whole.
Well, I mean, most people also don't know that Clemson game, I fractured my pelvic bone.
Oh, well, see, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, so most people don't know that. And I actually, before any testing, any combine or anything like that, I was not rated 37 wide receiver overall. I was rated like almost close to the top 10. And some of the reports had me as the number one overall athlete. I played in the Shrine Bowl. That game I was actually mic'd for. It was crazy because I couldn't really practice that week because I was still hurt. You know, I was hurt. I didn't know. I just thought it was a groin injury. So when I got to the combine, I was down. Actually, I trained with Calvin Johnson every morning down at Tom Shaw down in Orlando, Florida. So, you know, I trained with a lot of the top receivers that was coming out that year, but I couldn't really perform. So I came back home to get some medical treatment with Dr. Guy. And, you know, I healed up a little bit, but we still didn't know until I got to the combine and they did my x-rays that I had a fractured pelvic bone.
Right.
So that was the reason, you know, of the slow 40 yard dash and not being able to finish the workout after I ran that. I think I even hurt it even more because that was the first time I really like opened up right. Running after that. And that was the major issue for me dropping all the way down. And then pro day, I tweaked it again, thought I was ready to go. So It was that like a lot of people still, like I said, they only know about the Achilles injury, but that game against Clemson when Jacoby Ford cut back across the field and he looked like he was going to go out of bounds and my cleat got stuck in the ground and I felt the pop and that was that. And I suffered actually for like 2 years of even like healing to be able to go play arena ball. So, you know, it was kind of a tough recovery. But, you know, I don't think it had anything to do with position. Mm-hmm. You've seen a lot of guys change positions during that time. And I could have did the same thing. And it was just another injury.
Right. So do you feel like you came back as explosive after the Achilles injury? Or did you feel like you sort of missed a step after that?
No, I felt great. I mean, it took me. Mental-wise, when you come off an injury like that, you definitely, you know, you thinking like, hey, it happened, and I wasn't expecting it to happen. It could happen again. That was my first injury, really, in playing sports. Period. Mm-hmm. So, I didn't know how to recover from that, but I did recover. And once I, you know, figured it out that I was okay, I didn't have any problems. I felt like I was explosive, but you know, I felt that I wasn't never the same player right. again.
Absolutely. So, you know, obviously life after football for you, I say life after football because I think you did a lot of, you know, coaching and you were obviously at the South Carolina game against Akron, you know, getting back on campus. I think it was definitely great. Again, I know that you had, you know, a rocky career, if you will, but I think the South Carolina fans are definitely – we're definitely ecstatic to see you back in Columbia, back in Williams-Brice. I definitely think one thing that's gotten much better under Coach Muschamp is – you know, back all the alumni, getting back the people. One of the things, like I said earlier, one of my favorite things about what we do with the Spurs Up Show and just being able to cover the South Carolina Gamecocks is I think it's really cool to kind of appreciate where you came from and appreciate the different eras of South Carolina athletics. And, you know, obviously your era was very, very important because, like you mentioned, there's a Stephen Garcia, there's not a Connor Shaw. None of those guys come about if – that seed isn't put in Steve Spurrier's head that, hey, you do need a dynamic quarterback that can run and can throw, or at least has the threat to do both. But just talk about what you've been up to since your playing days at South Carolina and that professional career you had. Just talk about what you've been up to and, you know, what you're up to now.
Well, I went back to school in 2012 and, you know, finished my degree. I needed like awesome. a year to finish and I was allowed, you know, to be a GA. It was called an undergrad GA for the team that year.
Right.
Connor was there, you know, Clowney was there, all those guys, Lattimore. So I actually had fun, learned a lot, you know, coach, and I helped coach. Me and Coach Spurrier Jr. has a great relationship.
right.
We have a great relationship. We actually text. He's at Washington State now. We text all the time. But – yeah, but just after that, I got my degree, went in. I was an offensive coordinator for 4 years, two successful years with Brooklyn Casey, and then two with Keenan High School, which they end up going to the state championship. I haven't coached since then. I'm actually now a teacher. I'm a teacher, believe it or not, at Blythewood High School. Not coaching. I'm not coaching anything right now. Just working with the kids and going out in the community, doing other different things, and doing some fitness training with my clients. I got a fitness company called BU4U. It's just basically allowing people to come in and not just get just fitness training, but also allowing them to get some type of motivation and encouragement, and teaching them how to be the best them and love themselves for how they are. And that's kind of what I do now. It's just more of me just loving people. I mean, right. I mean, one thing during my career, I can say that I always, after every single home game, every player ran and jumped on the bus, I stayed after every single game and signed every autograph until the last person got it signed. So, I mean, that's one thing that I can say that I did do for the fans. So, you know, I love them. That's why I still get the same respect from them, because I think some of those things will never go unforgotten.
Absolutely. Like you said, I mean, I think you're somebody I can definitely look at and say you gave everything you had to South Carolina. And I mean, I think that's, you know, I think that's all fans really want, I guess you can say, from their student athletes.
Yeah,
but I mean, you definitely went above and beyond, I would say, honestly, just with your, you know, selfless nature, being willing to switch positions, even if it wasn't always what you wanted. I'm kind of curious, when you went back as a GA in 2012, did you have much communication with Steve Spurrier? Was it kind of like stay out of his way at all costs? Or, I mean, what was that working dynamic like?
It was actually totally different from Savelle the player, from Savelle the coach, you
right.
know. It was totally different. Actually, during that time, you know, I was able to actually have a small relationship with Coach Spurrier. And, you know, his wife, everyone loved Jerry. You know, it was different. It was a very different environment, total change, you know, new strength coach. The strength coaches during that time was totally awesome, moving away from the Mark Smith era. So it was different. Had a lot of support, from him. The AD at, you know, the assistant ADs. A lot of people mostly don't know that either. They were going to hire me into the staff as far as recruiting. that next year. But of course, we all know the story, how that ended with him, leaving in the middle of the season. So ever since then, I've just been hoping and looking for an opportunity to get in some form of position to where I can, maybe go out, recruit inside of the state of South Carolina, help with the high school coaches. Been doing high school football games with Corey Miller. He's been great to me during this time, allowing me to get in, do sports, and still cover football. That's been big. And I think that if I was allowed, or if they have a position as far as like being able to be in, like going to the different high schools, meet the high school players here, continue to recruit this area, we'll stop losing, some of the players or that are supposed to be here in the state that's going to perform other places, right, even up the road to Clemson.
Yeah, no, for sure. I definitely think you're on to something there. And I was going to ask, wrapping up here, but I was going to ask, I saw your tweet today, just kind of talking about the whole recruiting aspect, and that was something. Is that something you're actively trying to do, whether it be with the recruiting, or do you want to also get back in coaching, or do you really specifically want to focus on kind of the people side of things and work in the recruiting aspect?
I love the people part of it. I don't need, to do the whole coaching part of it. I think a lot of schools have great people that are that's very crucial to the recruiting process that never get talked about, never seen. I'm not asking to be a Marcus Lattimore type face of the franchise or school person, but I do think that there's a lot of people who were there, like Andre Goodman, had a great NFL career that most people don't know. He was very influential to a lot of players during the time. I forgot the other cornerback that came in. He was there for a while. You got guys like Langston Moore who don't really get talked about.
He was on our show. He's a great dude.
Great guy.
Doing a lot of good work in the state, too.
A lot of great work in the state with him and Preston Thorne. Actually got a chance to work with him at Blythewood. So, it's a lot of guys that really don't get talked about at all these major schools. And, actually talking to Steve Spurrier Jr. and some of the other coaches, they was like, you would be perfect to be in some form of relation spot. I think Clyde Wren is still the high school relations coach person right now, coordinator or administrator. But, it's time. I just think it's time for, to find a position at some school, whether it's Carolina. I would love for it to be Carolina, but I've been talking to a few more, different schools as far as, maybe coming in and being some part of the front office part. And that's what I'm going to school for. I'm finishing up my master's. I finished up my master's in May, and then I'm gonna start my doctorate in sports administration. So, that's where I want to get into, and that's where I'm leading myself. So,
That's awesome, man. Yeah, education is power. I love that. That's awesome. Bettering yourself. Yeah, it's funny, you talked about you were back in Columbia at South Carolina at the Akron game. You've gotten to, I guess you got to meet Will Muschamp. Just really quickly, talk about your impressions of the job he's doing. Obviously, year three, South Carolina headed to the Belk Bowl. Just talk about kind of the job you see he's doing and how do you think he fits in the South Carolina program as far as them moving forward?
Well, actually, man, I honestly love Will Muschamp, man. He himself, Coach Thompson and McClendon and those guys are top notch guys, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, you meet them and you it's not like you don't even get the almost like coach vibe. It's more kind of like the friendly vibe. When I met Coach Muschamp way before this on the field thing. The first story, he was telling the interesting story because he was actually the defensive coordinator that Auburn game we should have won. And he was just telling me how, hey, man, you responsible. You almost got all of us fired that game. And I think he did have to fire like his D-line coach or something like that. I can't remember, but that was the first time I met him. It was so funny. And I text him almost after every game, something like that. I just texted him. I know for a fact the past two games, and also thank him for allowing me to be a part of that Akron game, even though it's a makeup game, but you know, to just be able to get back to the school, get around and do some of the things. And when Debo was going through his injury, I reached out to him and gave him some motivation to extend a hand. So it's just something that you have to continue to do to show that, you know, that's not just football. It's a GC Nation. And that's the thing that we take with us through life, to know that it's our own fraternity. And Coach Muschamp, I can tell he's growing that and allowing the alumni to even be able to be a part of the program. So that's a major plus for one, and just what he's doing already in 3 years in recruiting. And they probably don't even need me in recruiting, but you know, but just what he's doing in recruiting and all the things that he's doing for these guys. You don't hear about guys really getting arrested. Mm-hmm. You don't hear about guys going to nightclubs, getting fights, or getting kicked off the team for you know, drugs or anything like that. So that goes far to show you that, hey, you know, this coach really has it. He maybe has a tough stint at Florida or wherever he's been, but here at Carolina, you know, he's really shown up to be a pretty good coach, and our hats off to him.
Absolutely. Yeah, and absolutely. Is it crazy to go back to Williams-Brice and just look around at, not just inside Williams-Brice, but obviously you've got the indoor facility, you've got the new ops building that's going to be finished probably in the next month or so. I mean, just the aesthetics of Williams-Brice around it. I mean, it looks a lot different than it did in 2003, 2004, even 2005. Yeah. I mean, I have to imagine that's pretty crazy to go back. And like I said, I think it's cool to talk to you guys. And you know, we talked to Langston and Phil Petty, people that were early 2000s, late 90s, that I feel like really set the foundation for what South Carolina was able to do 2010 to 2013 and what they're doing now with building with Will Muschamp. So I think it's, you know, very cool. Like you said, the GC Nation, the unique fraternity, I think is a real thing. And I think Will Muschamp's bringing that back. So,
yeah, the facilities are beautiful. When I got there the other day, I didn't even know like where to go to Will Call. I'm like, man, then I actually bumped into the Connor shop, but bumped into Connor. He was going to get I guess his tickets. I haven't been to any games in the past few years, and that was like really the first. It was kind of like I said, a surprising thing that, you know, that I got honored as. That celebrity game, starter game, but right. it was fun. It was a great experience, and it kind of really lifted off a lot of like bad weight that I carried in that stadium and being around that you know, the program. And hopefully things continue to grow with the alumni. We got the alumni center. You have alumni dinners. Got alumni games now. So It's so much that's going on that this staff has brought up, and I'm loving it. I think it's going to be great. I hope the basketball program starting to do that. I talked to one of the Dozier brothers. He said the basketball program not doing stuff like that, but I would love to see our university, just like I said, as all sports continue to honor the facilities that like knowing where they come from, new track facility. New tennis, knowing some of the guys and some of the women who have been the foundation of a lot of these things starting to happen. And I just appreciate it. And I love being back out there on the field. So it was great.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have to make sure that, cause I know they're going to have a, some sort of hall in the new ops facility that kind of has highlights of past players. We got to make sure they have a section of the facility dedicated to one of only four college football players with a 600-yard rushing passing receipt. We got to make sure Will Muschamp knows about that, so we can have that highlighted in our facility.
I see all these names up in the stadium for getting recognized for like national records and stuff like that, but not mine. And you know, I've been waiting on them to put that up there. You know, I just think in college football, period. You know, the even with the Wildcat stuff. I mean, that was on video games. I mean, you would think something. Yeah. So you know, I mean, it's something that I know about. You know, stories be told, but that'll be part of my documentary series show that's going to come out very soon. That'll be coming up. So a lot of people who heard some of the things this show, they will be able to hear a lot more things that took place in that film. So that'll be coming out soon.
Awesome. Well, you got a release date set for that, or is that just in the works?
We have not got a release date for it, but it's going to be called Institutionalized. The reason why I chose that name for it is because a lot of college players, you know, they go through so much behind the scene things that fans never get to understand. You know, that's why I was so upset about the booing and stuff of college athletes. You know, they have no idea what college athletes go through on and off the field. So I think no college athlete should ever be booed. I don't care about his performance, whatever it is, should never be booed, because you never know. And I just think that for me, I didn't have an NFL career. So, what can I ruin? I can't ruin anything. I can't ruin a teaching job because I'm already teaching. So why not, you know, allow, you know, some of the players now, it's still players that are caught up in different institutions. Look at the Clemson quarterback, Kelly Bryant, his situation, how that played out. You know, you just look at a lot of different players that get caught up in systems, and no one gets to know the true story. The media only gets to write up how they want to write it up, like writing up Seville chose to go to defense. I never wanted to go to defense. I literally got my stuff and walked out of the stadium. And so, you know, it's a lot of stuff that's going to be talked about on that video, the whole getting arrested stuff for my picture and stuff like that. So I'm just going to hold a lot of that stuff. Don't want to talk about a lot of it, but you know, a lot of people don't want me to do it, but I don't care. I'm going to do it anyways. And that's really just where it goes from there.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I think it's good to just put stuff out in the open and be honest. And I know we'll be looking forward to that. Legendary conversation, man. Appreciate having you on. Let everybody know where they can find you on social media, and also your training business as well, and just kind of where they can find you.
Okay. Yeah. Basically my Instagram, I just got an Instagram page again and a Twitter page. I just got a Twitter page again, but it's just at Seville Newton. I changed it from my old producer name when I was doing music, Nudie Beats. So now it's back to just at Seville Newton. You can find me on Facebook. Same thing, Seville Newton. My fitness company is right here. It's located 1971 LeGrand Road at Robinson Neal. See, I'm wearing one of the shirts right now. Robinson Neal Boxing Academy. If you want information about training and stuff like that, we got meal preps and all different type of things that we do with that company. And it's find me on Facebook, and that'll be a great conversation. I'd love to have you train you. Hey, Seville Newton as your trainer. How about that?
Yeah, I'm about to say we might have to do a special piece of content. The Spurs Up Show. We get training at Seville Newton's boxing
Come
academy.
On.
Yeah,
well, actually, me and Carlos Powell, NIT champion too.
Yeah, that's a name drop right there, Carlos Powell.
Yeah,
that's a name.
Carlos Powell. Yeah, we both actually train at. We actually train our clients at the same gym.
Wow.
So that's something huge. You bump into Devin Downey, Tina Roy. A lot of those guys is actually at a boxing gym, so it's actually fun. So if you come in, the guy that owns the gym is Dominique Robinson Neal. He's a great, great guy. His son is 20-0 as a professional boxer, never get any recognition here in Columbia, South Carolina. So it's very fun. I mean, come in, me or Carlos, one of the former Gamecocks, but he has his company, and I have mine, and it's BU for You. So be you for you, love yourself. So come in and I'll take care of anything that you're dealing with or you need your fitness needs.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, go check him out for sure. Again, Seville, we really do appreciate it. Legendary conversation, man. We really appreciate you taking the time, and let's do it again sometime.
Sounds great, man. Anytime.
Yeah, absolutely. So for Seville Newton and Thomas Floyd, I'm Chris Phillips. We appreciate you guys tuning in. Catch us next week. We're back with another episode. Until then, appreciate it. Stay tuned.